The first thing I need to say this morning is I want to apologize for two Alans turning up in the talk the other day. I have no idea where he came from, and the reason I'm apologizing because you only paid for one to be here. But I also want to put some of the blame on the Adamson children. Because 2 years ago at Shasta, behind a tree, wherever, I would hear this, Alan, 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 consistently, and then it would change to Steve. So you're lucky you didn't get Steve as well the other morning. Yeah, so you should be. I just want to start with, which is where I start most days, two quotes from Emerson. Fear always springs from ignorance. And fear defeats more people than any other one thing in the world. Emerson said that in his time. It hasn't changed, has it? We all have a choice. Within us there are two children. Child of love, a child of fear. And it's about which one we consistently feed that grows. Emily Dickinson, love her. Love her, love her poems. Someone who knew what fear was. And in our counselling agency back home, in the room where the counsellors have their downtime before they go and see their clients, that's on the wall. To remind them that they go in that room to carry the hope until the other person can find in their soul that bird with feathers that sings and never stops. So I've asked Rebecca to leave that up there because some of you may need to find hope right now. And that's just a reminder for you. So you get the bonus of me talking and looking at that if I'm boring you. Okay. And on the subject of fear, when Louise, our daughter, was about six, we went to this place called Pleasurewood Hills, a fun fair place, and we foolishly, I mean, she was six and she wanted to go on this, it was called a chairlift, really. It's one you sit on and it just goes like a wheel, but it's not a big wheel. It's probably the height of this building, you know, and you just sit on it and then you go up and... Ferris wheel, thank you. And, of course, Val needed more time to get on. She was going to go on. She's not, you know, as afraid of heights as I am, or was, still am. And so while it was they were kindly being patient for Val to get on, Louise and I travelled to the top. So there we are right at the top, where Val has placed us. And Louise turns to me and says, Daddy, I'm scared. And I said to her, so am I, darling, let's sing. And so we sang, You Are My Sunshine. But when she was diagnosed with breast cancer, I could not say, she was scared, but I would not say and could not say and would not be in that place of saying, I'm also scared. I would not be a child of fear. She needed an adult, a father who had no fear in that moment. So we need to know when to be a child of fun and play and last night, stunt night, fantastic, children playing, But we need to know when we need to be in the adult. And so often, in this world, we have children parenting children. That's where so much abuse of children comes from children who should be adults, but they're not. They're destructive children just getting their needs met. And the only stage in life where we are just interested in our needs and nothing else is when we're babies. And two-year-olds, the rage of a two-year-old when it cannot get what it wants. And so there are too many two-year-olds on the planet acting as parents and sometimes grandparents. When Louise was having her treatment, a chemotherapy, the oncologist said, I will tell you, she's 24, she's had her three children, I will tell you that this stuff I'm putting into your body will kill off your fertility. And she said, bless her, that's all right, I've got my three boys. 2 years later, Charlton was born. So with all the knowledge that these wonderful medical people have, yeah? Helen Keller says there's a wisdom beyond the senses. What a wonderful phrase for someone who only had three senses. She was deaf and she was blind. So she only had three senses. And I love her phrase. She said, I made more use of my three rooms than you made of your five. There's someone. If you want to look at someone who overcame fear, you read the life story of Helen Keller and you read her descriptions of nature and what she experienced going for a walk in the woods through her senses, not being blind and deaf, through those other three senses, through touch. Just read what she experienced through touch. Amazing. She could work out the mood of a person by touching the floor when they walked in the room. The tread, the sound of the footsteps. She would work out their personalities. Were they angry? Were they calm? And so on, just by touch. What we have become is not who we are. We are partakers of the divine nature. I will say this slowly, this next sentence, and please put your hand up if I'm speaking too quickly, if I say something you don't understand, because I want this, I feel there are important things that need to be understood. As speakers, sometimes we think we're saying important things. Actually, the important thing is that they get heard. And Jesus said, he that has ears, let them hear. The hearing is so important. So, we are partakers of the divine nature. You're probably all familiar with that phrase from Peter. We are part of the divine nature, not yet takers. We are part of the divine nature, but not yet takers. How much of the divine in you have you taken hold of and made yours and made your own? Because that's your inheritance in Christ. That is your inheritance. When are you going to claim your inheritance and become much more of a taker of the divine nature in you, the child of love in you, who has so many presents to give you? The text for today is Isaiah 43:18-19. Do not call to mind the former things or ponder the things of the past. Behold, I will do something new. Whilst we hang on to the past and define ourselves by the past, something new cannot be done in our lives. Because we have to knock down the old building before a new one can be constructed. Yeah, we have to clear the sight of all the old stuff before something new can be built on that same site, who we are. So some of us need to go about being in the demolition business before we move into the creative part of ourselves. In other words, we need to know what we say no to so that building collapses. Those thoughts collapse in us. We no longer think them anymore. And therefore, the building is not created. The Bible says, as a man thinks, so he is. William James, wonderful, wonderful psychologist. He said that human beings only use 10% of their mind. 10% of their mind. And what it got me wondering about when I've been doing my workshops on unlearning fear, is how much of that 10% is filled with fear. So really, the capacity, the potential within us, the divine potential in us, how little of it is actually used. The Bible says, may the minds be in you, the mind of Christ be in you. That was in Jesus. Jesus knew how to use the mind of Christ in himself. He knew fear, the same as we knew fear. In every aspect of life, he was the same. Except he plumbed the depths of himself to find the Christ mind. What did you think he went up to do in the mountains when all those people were clamoring for all those needs to be met by him? I cannot meet them by being Jesus the personality. I can only meet them from the mind of Christ. It's the Father in me that does the works, not the personality Jesus. We need to really understand how we've got sidetracked, and I'm coming on to that. And we've got sidetracked to concentrate on things about Jesus rather than what he taught. He taught for the mind of Christ to be in us. That's what he taught. But we focused on the outside, on the personality, as we do in this world, the ego-driven personalities. You know, in England, we have these reality shows. Andy Warhol's 15 Minutes of Fame. And these people who have nothing to say to the world are on the front pages of newspapers. How ridiculous is that? I started my counselling training when I was 49. And about a year in to that, when I was 50-ish, the Christmas day came and Val came over to me quietly and she handed me a present. And I opened the present and it was a baseball mitt and a baseball. Because from the ages of 10 to 15, I loved rounders every Friday night, like I said before. Absolutely loved it. Loved baseball. Read those wonderful novels on baseball that Les Shasta pointed me out when he knew I loved baseball. Wonderful stories. And so, but as I opened this present, tears started to run down my cheeks. And I thought, where are these tears coming from? Then I realized it took me back to childhood and Christmases in childhood, where a Christmas day, there was a pile of presents over there and there was a pile of presents over there. There were presents for boys and presents for girls. And they were supplied by Oxfordshire County Council. And so as a boy, I would go to the boys' pile and pick a present. There was no, dear Alan, love from. And I realized that where that came from, so it was actually that deprivation, if you like. That I had that bittersweet childhood of, yes, it was filled with love, but it was also filled with moments of absence of love. Our lives are a paradox. And ambivalence is something we have to deal with every day. What Karen Horney calls, you know, one of your wonderful, you know, psychologists, female psychologists in the 1940s and 50s, who challenged Freud and thought, actually, you know, men are not right about everything. And she was brave enough as a woman to come out and say so. And she describes this as our inner conflicts. We are conflicted. We are conflicted every day. Thoughts of fear, thoughts of love. Thoughts of fear, thoughts of love. That's the conflict. And so in my imagination, I thought, which part of me needs to have this baseball mitt and ball? I'm being very careful here, Eric. So I went back in my imagination to the 10-year-old in me, the one that lost his family, his friends, his environment, his village, lovely village, beautiful village, was consistently appointed as the most beautiful village in Oxfordshire. That's where I grew up. So all those sights and sounds of that village were lost to me as well as the people. And it was the 10-year-old boy that I knew that had the most deprivation. And so in my imagination, I just took it back to that 10-year-old part of me and said, there you are. This is from the man, Alan, giving it to the boy. Now you can never say that you experienced loss and that you were not loved in that moment when you were 10, on that rainy day. Here I am with this present, which he would have loved at that time as well. And so healing takes place in us when we revisit those parts of ourselves where the hurt and the pain is. And we need to find the mind of Christ in us now and then walk back with that mind of Christ into that situation and provide the healing. And when that healing is done, you never, ever need to go there again. And it's one of those empty spaces that I've talked about. That empty space gets filled. And one of the things I often say to people when I'm working with them where there's been bereavement and loss, people they've loved for 40, 50 years, a child that's died suddenly and so on. And I talk to them about the empty space that's been left. And I say to them, what will you do with that empty space? What will you do with it? Will you fill it with love? Or will you leave it empty and mourn? Will you forever gaze at the empty tomb, wondering about what was there and is no longer there? To help them move forward. And like I said, you know, I said it quickly because there's things that I need to continue to say. But after 2 years of Louise being diagnosed with cancer and going through a treatment, completed a treatment, I guess, by that time, Val went for a routine mammogram and diagnosed with the same condition. But just like David, with the lion, with the bear, when a bigger giant came along. You see how life works. These things come in our life sometimes, these challenges, but they're there to equip us, to make us stronger. That's what the Bible teaches us with all those stories about those wonderful people. It teaches us that strength can be increased in us. And courage can be increased in us. And never go. Because it's of God. That's why it can never go. It's not temporary. Nothing that God does is temporary. That it's here and not there. The everlasting arms. Fathers who play the game of, You know, you jump and I'll catch you. And then pull their arms away. Because they think it's funny. God will never, ever pull his arms away. The everlasting arms are always there. We can trust them to the absolute. Every single moment. And so Val was going through her treatment, and I get a phone call from Louise one day when I was at work. And she says to me, Mum has had a fall. This is Val had had 3 bouts of chemotherapy, and she was really struggling physically to manage all this poison. Val finds remarkable energy within herself every single day. But this poison going into her body to do her good, eventually, was really, really draining her. And I got this phone call from Louise to say, Dad, Mum's had a fall. She thinks she's broken her leg, which is the leg that she's got the brace on. And don't, Dad, please drive carefully. Bless her, that she had that level of maturity, you know, to say, Dad, drive carefully. And in my mind, for 10 minutes, going to the car, it's about a 20-minute ride back home. And for the first 10 minutes, my mind was racing with fear and full of fear. That's the leg which is with a brace. She may never walk again. You know, Val will never be able to independently go where she wants to go. She will have, like Peter in the Bible, Jesus saying, one day someone will carry you where you don't want to go. Yeah. Val is the freest spirit I know, and I didn't want those limitations coming into her life. She's had enough limitations. So for the first 10 minutes, all these fears coming in. But because Glenn Clark, wonderful teaching. We have to train to be athletes of the spirit. You have to train. You have to put in the work. When you see these Olympic athletes winning their gold medals, you don't see the loneliness of the 5 o'clock in the morning runs that they do to train and train and train. But because I've trained myself over the years to not give in to fear, like I've said before, 10 minutes I was in that fear and it gripped me and it would not let go of me. And then this song came to mind. Be still and know that I am God. And a verse of that. I am the Lord that healeth thee. The I am. I want to talk to you about the I am in my next talk. But the I am in me took over. The time I arrived at the house, the mind of Christ was in me. And the paramedics, Val's sister, Louise, they were there. Ian, our son, came shortly. He doesn't live far away. He came. Val was put safely into the ambulance, taken to the hospital where a team of professionals are waiting just for her. When she got there, no hanging around. God had taken over and she is healed. And as you've seen her, she can walk around and so on. So it's how long we stay with fear. That's what I want you to get the message clear, loud and clear. You choose. Like William James says, we change our life by what we're thinking about. As Wayne Dyer talks about, you know, you want a different life, think a different life. Emerson, you think me a child of my circumstance. I make my circumstance. Emerson meets the love of his life, Ellen. They're married for 18 months. She dies at the age of 20. He marries Lydia, who becomes Lydian to him. And Waldo, their son, his beloved son, dies at 5 years of age. His two brothers, Charles, who he saw Charles as the more intelligent of the two compared to himself. Charles was the shining light. Charles was the orator. Charles could put, he would give the thoughts into Emerson's mind and say, run with that, write about that. So he was the comet that would come with these truths into Emerson's mind. And he was Emerson's best friend. His younger brother, but his best friend. And he died, I think, at 27. And Emerson's other brother died at 29. So do you think Emerson knew something about circumstances? I will not be a child in my circumstances. That's what he's saying. I will be an adult and I will control my circumstances. Didn't use this language, but this is what I know he meant. I will control my circumstances with the mind of Christ in me. And that's where I'll create my circumstances from. And that's where I'll live from. So do not let the past define who you are. For some reason, a few... My watch is upside down. That's not a good thing. Poems have come to me recently in the last few months, just a flood of poems that have just come into my head, and I might say something about that in the next talk. But one of the lines in one of the poems, which is called Questions, is the past the die that's cast? Yeah. So we can never move on. And Paul Tillich, you know, Burns and I have so much more in common than we knew about. But I love Paul Tillich, and he says, I would recommend this book to you, those of you who love books, The Eternal Now by Paul Tillich. It's a collection of his sermons. And one of his sermons is from Paul saying, forgetting those things that are past. Wonderful, wonderful sermon by Paul Tillich. How we can forget and why we should forget, but also what we should carry forward the good. Yeah, don't forget all the past, but only carry forward the good, carry forward the love. Like I've said, this wonderful group of women in my life, where love and men, where love, droplets of love, carry that forward, Alan, and you can never say your tank is empty. That's not in the third person. Origen, one of the early fathers who helped put the New Testament together as we know it. It was his idea, I believe, actually, to collect all those writings together. They were all over the place, written at different times, and so on. I believe that the letters, Paul's letters, were the first document, and so on. So it's not in chronological order. But Origen was one of the minds that had the vision to put that together. And he says, though we are made in the image of God, our likeness to God only exists in potentiality. Robert Browning, one of my favourite, if not my favourite poet. I love Wordsworth, but I love Browning more. I love Robert Browning, as did Glenn Clark. And Robert Browning coined this phrase, God in the germ. God in the germ, God in the seed of us. Germ, not in the sense that it's become to mean now, but it's now in the molecule, whatever. But God in that, in us, in the seed. And Meister Eckhart, that wonderful German mystic, talks about the seed of a pear tree growing into a pear tree, and the seed of a nut growing into a nut tree. And therefore, what would the seed of God grow into? in you. In you. Not outside of you, in you. Not in someone else, whoever they might be. And I came to realize that we used to sing this chorus, Ian and I, back in the day. Follow, follow, I will follow Jesus anywhere, everywhere, and so on. I did not end up in Israel, walking in the footsteps of wherever Jesus went. That was his divine plan. I have my own. And so do you. And it's in the seeds of your being. And you need to unwrap that scroll that's inside you. First of all, you need to find it. But you cannot find it if you are living lives of fear. Jeremiah 6 verse 16. Stand by the ways and see and ask for the ancient paths. Where the good way is. And walk in it. And you shall find rest for your souls. But they said, we will not walk in it. We'd rather walk in fear. Jeremiah 18:15 comes back to this. They have stumbled from their ways, from the ancient paths, to walk in bypaths, not on a highway. And my view, and you're always welcome to challenge my view and anything I say, and think your own thoughts. And again, I love Emerson saying, don't hold me to what I said yesterday. The thought I have today is completely brand new. So don't hold me to what I said yesterday. Because God is always creating something new in us. And new truths become old truths very quickly. If we let them. And I think the bypaths are all religions leading to the highway, but they are not the highway. On the highway is the presence of God. When we're in the presence of God, what do we need to know about knowing about God, which is what theology is? Yeah, when we're in the presence of God, what do we need to know? We just need to drink in God, don't we? And when Jesus said, I and my Father are one, and you are in me, you are in us, that inseparable unity of oneness. And it's in the oneness that healing comes, because it's the Father that does it. So those of you that are concerned that when I talk about saying no to sickness, we have to be where we are. Always have to be where we are. And truth unfolds for us, and the power unfolds for us. And I just need to get to this bit, because it is so important. That when Peter was in that denial phase, when Peter was gripped with fear, when he was gripped with fear, Jesus began to doubt Peter. And he said to Peter, Peter, do you love me? You know I do. No, Peter, do you love me? Lord, you know I do. Peter, do you love me? Do you know why Jesus asked three times? Because he knew Peter was speaking from fear. And therefore, his yes did not mean yes. Jesus was waiting to hear a yes that had no trace of fear in it. That's why he asked Peter to repeat it. Peter, tell me without fear that you love me. Now, I've been in Christian circles over the years, I end up being treated with suspicion. I don't think I will be here, but... And that suspicion has come about sometimes through some things I say and some things I don't do. And one of those things is, when we sing songs to God, if those words do not resonate with me in the deep of me, I will not sing them. And so he doesn't believe the same things as us because he's not singing those particular words. Why is he not singing? And that just being and not singing. What's going on in him? We're all doing it. Why isn't he doing it? Fear in them that he's not doing the same. And Emerson's wonderful phrase about human beings, contrasts and flavors. Contrasts and flavors. So when there are people we find hard to love, contrasts and flavors. We don't all have to like vinegar, do we? Thou always has to have vinegar on a fish and chips. I don't. It's all right. So, the power of words. You see, that phrase in John, wonderful phrase. The Word was with God. The Word was with God. When our words are with God, and they're spoken from the divine part of us, then they have power. Then healing takes place. Then Jesus could say to the young boy, or speak to the fear that was in the boy that was having epileptic seizures. Leave him. Leave him. We haven't arrived at the place in our divine development yet where we can stare cancer in the face and say, leave him, leave her. We just haven't developed enough yet because we don't live from the divine place enough yet. We haven't learnt oneness with God enough yet because it's God that does the work and we don't have to be there physically. Frank Lobach, wonderful, understood that we could, in our mind, bring the presence of God to a situation that was thousands of miles away. Edgar Cayce. There have been souls who knew how to do this. They could get themselves into the presence of God. And then their word being with God in their minds, they could speak that word of power into that situation thousands of miles away. Jesus with a Roman centurion's daughter. That wonderful Roman, not a Jew, a Roman, who said, you don't have to be there. You don't have to touch my daughter. You don't have to lay hands on. You just say the word. The word. You just say the word. Oh, if only we understood that. The word, when it has power, it has to transform because it's God, who's the only transforming presence there is. So words have power to transform our lives if the words are with God. And I want you to think about that when you say the CFO prayer, when you say, let there be peace in all the world and let it begin with me. Peace is the absence of fear. See, all the spiritual qualities are waiting to rush in and fill us. We don't have to say yes to them. No yeses are required. We just need to say no to fear. And then that no, if it's heard in the deep of us, if it's heard right down deep, read William James. But if it goes right down deep and penetrates the subconscious, which is the part of us that just hears and responds and obeys, it's like a servant. We have to send down a different message that says, I'm no longer afraid. And it has to be loud and clear, so that then the responses that come with our traditional fear responses, they will come. But when we speak the power, the word that goes right down and penetrates, and we have to repeat it, just like Peter had to repeat. We have to repeat it and repeat it, because these are conditioning messages going down in our minds, and we need to be transformed by the renewing of our minds. There was a time when we walked with God. The highway, when we walked with God, but we have wandered down pathways. And I must read this, because as I'm thinking about paths, and there's plenty of other stuff here that I'm not going to get to, but I feel what I've said is enough for you to get hold of and go away with. Sometimes I am like the farmer who scatters the seed and just throws it out there, and, you know, if the seed lands where it lands, which in some ways I do love that, because it the absence of ego. Here's handfuls of seed. Here you are. You do what you want with it, because it's your problem. You either water and feed it, or it falls on stony ground, or it falls on ground that actually you've cultivated, and it will grow or it won't grow. But that's your responsibility, not mine. I just throw. But I do want to finish with this, a couple of things. Denby, bless you. Is your offer just go a couple of minutes? Thank you. We have a trailer that's on this permanent site in a beautiful part of Suffolk in England. And our daughter and her husband and our four grandsons are there this week. And we got a text saying our nine-year-old had ridden his bike without a friend's bike without stabilizers for the first time. Yeah. Training wheels. For the first time, he'd borrowed his friend's. And so he wanted us to know that, you know. But Charlton, who's two, and he also runs everywhere. And before we came away, a few weeks before we came away, he pushed his brother off the bunk bed. Is that what you call it over here? Yeah. Yeah. And he thought, it's so funny the way that, as two-year-olds do, it was so funny that his five-year-old brother, he pushed him off the bed, and he thought, it's so funny the way that he went. He thought, oh, I'll do that. So he jumped off the bed, and he caught his shoulder on a drawer, and he fractured a bone in his shoulder. But what he did, he just walked around like that, knowing, because the pain there, but if he held it like that, it somehow put it together. And then he would just run, fling himself into the swimming pool, you know, unafraid. He was not going to let physical get in the way of his spirit. And Louise in her text said, Charlton has enjoyed daily walks around the campsite, telling everyone which path to take. Isn't that wonderful? That a two-year-old, in trading clouds of glory do we come from God who is our home. But prison bars go up around the boy. Fear grows up around the boy, around the girl. God is always at home. It's us that keep going out for walks. Yeah. So let me just finish with, in our most challenging times, and I know that some of you have spoken to me about friends who are going through awful times, who have had awful things happen to them in their most challenging times. And Emerson, there were times when his life was very, very challenging for him. And I've given this a separate, you know, entry on my journal page, and it was written, I wrote it on 22nd of October, 1997. The 22nd of October is my birthday. Either God is there or he is not there. Emerson. Either he is there or he is not there. Don't sing about him being there if you don't know he is there. At wedding, we sang three songs two of them, take my life and let it be consecrated to you, to thee. Take my moments and my days and let them flow in ceaseless praise. When I was 21 and I sang those words on our wedding day, I meant from the bottom of my heart, take my moments and my days. So every moment of my life since then, every day of my life since then, I handed that over to God. And whatever came into my life, came into my life. But I would never withdraw that commitment deep down in me to, you take my moment. You know best. You always know best. Always. Get my ego out of the way. So I really want you to think about the words you sing. They're aspirational, let's be fair. Most of the time they're aspirational. We're not in them. And I don't want that to be a judgment and you take it on as a judgment, because that's just the judgment's all about fear. You need to know what the fear language is. We have books written about the language of love. We need to have a lot more books written about the language of fear. And so when you sing, when you read things, when you say things to people, let them be the words that are with God and have power. Thank you.